Welcome back to another episode of the Profitable Audience Podcast. Today we're going to talk about something that I've been working on for like the last 3 years, I want to say. We're going to talk about publishing a book, whether you should go the traditional route or whether it pays to self-publish.
So this will be interesting because what made me think of this topic is that when we were at FinCon last week, we had a conversation with a woman named Barbara. Her last name is escaping me right now, but she has just written a book called Tipped. And it actually seems like a very interesting book. It's a book for people in the service industry and basically how to manage your finances when you have all these variables like variable income, you don't get taxed on everything all the time, you don't always necessarily have access to like Social Security, 401k, stuff like that. So she was talking to us last week. You ended up having a conversation with her and you asked her specifically why she decided to self-publish versus going with a traditional publisher. And I actually didn't hear her response.
Yeah, I can tell you her response. She wanted, due to her audience, mm-hmm. she wanted to make the book available to the masses. Mm-hmm. And she also wanted pricing flexibility and editorial flexibility to do whatever she wants. So let's say she wants to just give away the book mm-hmm. for a short period of time. Or let's say she just wants to charge $2 or $3. If you go with a traditional publisher, you're going to have to charge, I don't know what it is, like $10 for a Kindle book and maybe like $20 for a hardback. And yeah. There's very little flexibility on that.
Now you, on the other hand, are working on a book.
I'm working on a book, yeah.
And from the beginning, you never thought about self-publishing.
Nope.
So let's talk about why.
It's just ego. Do we have to say that out loud?
You do.
Yeah. Thanks, Tony. It's ego. I want it on the shelf. I want a big five publisher. I want to be able to take my kids to the bookstore and say, hey, your dad's book's on the shelf. And as far as I know, if you self-publish a book, it is possible to get it on a bookshelf, but it's a lot harder.
Okay, so let's talk about self-publishing, which you know nothing about. So
correct, that's your department. You've self-published.
I have self-published
books,
a book, so yeah. we'll all talk about self-publishing. So back when I started writing ebooks, I don't think Kindle was a thing, or at least it wasn't something that was.
It definitely wasn't a thing, Tony. Come on, we're talking about like the early 2000s here.
Back in 1987, when I published a book. Well, what's interesting is I remember the first time I put a book on Kindle, I actually had to hire somebody to format it for Kindle because it was such a complicated process and it wasn't something that you could Google and figure out. And there were people out there who basically, they didn't take a course, but they really educated themselves on formatting for Kindle and then they turned it into a service-based business, which is pretty smart, especially when Kindle first kind of broke into the publishing industry. Nowadays, and I haven't done anything since I've always had someone do that for me. Nowadays, it's much easier. I think even in like Google Docs and Microsoft Word, you can format for Kindle or format for e-publishing. I know they don't call it Kindle, obviously, but it's almost like an automated process where you don't need an expert to go and format your book for you, which I think is a huge advantage. It also reduces the barrier to entry, right? Which can be a good and bad thing. But I think it's an advantage for people who are interested in writing a book but don't have the means or maybe the connections to get a traditional publisher. I think that's just one more barrier that's been lifted for people, that it is totally possible today to write a book, do all the formatting yourself, get it on Kindle, and start selling it.
So you're telling me I could do this thing entirely in Docs and then export it directly to a file that I could just upload to Amazon Kindle?
It's not quite that simple, but yes.
Okay.
It's very close to being that simple.
Amazing. Okay.
Yeah. Because it used to be that I remember I hired a girl named Ashley, and that was sort of her little niche specialty, is that she would format your book. And the nice thing is when I had this done was that, you know, she guaranteed it would be accepted by Kindle. So if there were any issues, because a lot of times you can upload something to Amazon or like their publisher platform and you'll get it sent back because there's something and you have to correct it and you can do it again, like right then. It's not like there's, you know, you don't get penalized. But she guaranteed that she would handle all of that to me, which was a huge selling point. And honestly, today, I think I'd probably still have someone like format it for me just to be safe. I hate that kind of work. And so it's on that list of like things I don't want to do. I would rather outsource, but it is entirely possible to do it by yourself.
what I don't like is reading the book a bajillion times.
Yeah.
I'm so sick of my book right now just because I've read it. I literally read it probably four times cover to cover in like the last 48 hours.
It's, you know, it's funny is that I'm working on the Seller Summit sponsorship kit this week and I'm sick of reading about that. Because I keep going over this. It's not even a big thing, right? But I've read that media kit for so many years because the core information has stayed the same. I'm like,
you added some tiers.
I did. I had some. But like, I'm like, if I read one more time about how, you know, so I totally get what you're saying about reading your own book. It's kind of like when you go back and read blog posts and you're like, oh, I never want to read that again. But so back to the, you know, publishing on your own. I think. So we'll talk about the pros of traditional publishing. I think if I was trying to think about this earlier, if you want to make money, like if that's your goal, if you want to sell something to make money, I think self-publishing is a very good option. If you have something to say.
I think that's probably the better option. However, if you go the traditional publisher route, one big advantage is they give you this pretty large sum of money up front.
Yes.
Right. So it depends whether you want your money front-loaded or back-end-loaded. So I guess the bonus of a traditional publisher is you get this large sum up front, but after you reach a certain point, they get to keep like the majority of the revenue.
But
or not the majority, but a good cut, I should say.
The other thing, though, is that in order, like I know people who have gotten very large advances, that you have to have a very large audience or a very engaged audience or a large email list. You have to have a decent following. If you are a smaller creator and you don't have a lot of followers, you're not going to get a large advance. That's just the reality of it.
That's correct. That is correct.
So in my, I'm thinking to myself, if you have an idea or something that you want to get out, cut that, Maureen. If you have an idea or something that you want to get out there and you're a decent writer, I would say self-publish because you can get it up on Kindle. You can promote it on your website. You can promote it on different channels. And you're going to get the sales immediately. You don't have to have this huge audience to make the money first.
100%, actually. So if you don't have a large audience, you definitely want to self-publish. And then you can actually get traffic through Amazon search, right?
Yes.
People will be searching for topics. They'll find your book. And then you can use that book like a lead magnet that will guide people back to your other properties on the web.
The other thing that's nice about self-publishing is that you can leverage the audience you have to launch it. So some people that self-publish, especially on Amazon, don't have any audience at all. They just are authors. And so when they launch a book, they have to rely on other books that they've written or just organic Amazon, paid Amazon search, whatever. But if you have somewhat of an audience and you launch a book, you can do something like drop the price to 99 cents on Kindle and then get people to order it. And then sort of get the sales velocity going. So then other people who have no idea who you are going to find it and possibly buy it if the topic works for them.
Yep. That's like the strategy you've used, right?
Yes. Primarily. And a lot, I mean, like, it's not my story. I mean, like Brandon Turner used that when they launched one of their first books. Nick Loper used it for his book. Colin Jones used it for the Blackjack book. And it works. So you can leverage the audience that you do have. And it's funny, too, because I think when you have an audience, and this works for both ways, both sides of publishing, they like being a part of something, right? They like feeling like they're part of a bigger community. So if you have this book coming out, no matter how you publish it, you get those people excited about it and feeling like you're going to be the first to see my book, the first to read my book. You can do little sneak peeks, things like that with the audience that you have, which then just builds excitement for your book and will help the sales regardless of how you're publishing.
Yep. Yeah, I was thinking like you can do that with the traditional route too, right? You can leverage your audience and instead of charging little money for it, you could add on bonuses like, I don't know, like an autograph copy or something like that.
Yeah. The other thing, if you, so this is something that I did when I did my Christmas book was that it did so well, I published a second book the next year. And then it shows up in Amazon as like related products or, you know, because I'm the same author. And so that's the other thing is if you do a self-published book, it's really easy to do a second book. Whereas when you do a traditional, I mean, you know, you've been going through this process for a while now. It takes a lot. It's harder to write.
I mean, we can talk about the process in a little bit.
Yeah. It's just like I could sit down and write a book today and get it on and have it on Amazon by Monday. And, you know, well, I want to have a caveat for that. But, you know, so if I see something doing well, it's like I'm going to put that sequel out, right? If I write a book about, you know, how to wake up earlier, right? Because we know that's a good one. It's going like gangbusters and people love it. Then I would probably put a sequel out of like how to manage the rest of your day. And that would probably do well as too, because it's piggybacking on the success of the first book.
I mean, I know you make a lot of passive income off of these books that you wrote like long ago, right? That's kind of nice.
Yeah. Which that's the other thing too, is it's like, now I will say like I've had to go in, like one of my books I pulled off of Kindle like last year because it had something when, you know, because Kindle makes updates too, right? So one of my books is now has an error, like they can't be published on Kindle. So I have to go back and fix that. So you do have to, it's not completely passive, isn't it? Sometimes you have to go in and make updates. But for the most part, it's about as passive as you can get. The one thing I will say, if you're thinking about just publishing on your own, and I think people make a mistake with this when I said I could write a book by Monday, do not publish a book without having an editor. And you can hire one off of Upwork. You can ask, you know, some of your other content creator friends, like, hey, do you know of an editor? There's a lot of people who do this freelance, and so it's not hard. It's not like you have to have a full-time editor on your staff. Go get a college English major, right, to do it, pro bono for you, or what? Not pro bono, I don't think that's the right word, but you can't put the books out without editing. You will.
Let me ask you, I have lots of questions on this, okay. Actually. I remember you told me that that book you kind of threw together.
Yeah.
Did you have an editor for that
first
book?
I did have an editor.
Oh, you did?
Because okay. I had a blog editor. So I already had a blog editor. So she just got put in charge of the book.
Can you just give the audience an idea of how long this book was? And
I think it was 104 pages. So it was not a big book.
Right. Okay. So you can get away with self-publishing like shorter books.
I've seen books on Amazon that are under 50.
Okay.
I think it depends on the niche too. Like obviously if you want to do like a fiction book, it's got to be longer.
You just mentioned that you must have an editor.
Yeah.
What is your reasoning for that?
Because if you have a lot of grammar mistakes in your book, you will get negative reviews. People think like, oh, I put it on Amazon, people buy it, they don't read it. They do read it. And you will get feedback almost immediately on grammar issues. And you won't be able to sell. And I think people expect like, I mean, I kind of feel that way. If I read almost everything on Kindle, even if it's a book that I would, you know, normally I even check out library books on Kindle now. So for me, I expect when I read that for it to be the same quality as if I were to go to Barnes and Noble and pick a book off the shelf and read it. So when there's numerous errors in the book, I think it just immediately hurts the overall sales of the book. And you will get negative reviews on the book if the grammar is in spelling and all that stuff.
You know what's interesting about that statement is when I buy a book on Kindle from a traditional publisher, that's the type of quality I would expect. But when I buy like a $1 or $2 ebook, I'm a lot more forgiving. Like my standards are just, or you know, my expectations are different.
Yeah. I think for the avid Kindle reader, it's probably not that way.
Right. Okay. All right. So you're saying that people expect every book that they see on like the platform to be like a real book.
Yeah, like because I don't think a lot of, like, you and I have a different perspective on this because we sort of work in this industry, but most people don't know that like some of these Kindle books are written by me in my bedroom at night on my laptop. Right? They just assume that these are all authors and they don't know who's traditionally published and who's self-published when they buy a Kindle book. Just like I didn't know that e-commerce stores could be regular people, right? That sold on Amazon. So I think people in the general public don't understand that there's like a big difference between the two.
I guess that's fair. And I think it actually all depends on the cover, right?
Yes. So that's the other thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you are self-publishing, do not make your own cover.
Right.
Hire a graphic designer. Once again, Upwork, Fiverr. You don't need to spend a lot of money on this. But even someone on Fiverr can do a decent job with graphics. So you want to make sure that your cover is like pops, because as you know, people are scrolling through Amazon on their phones and you want your cover to like grab people as they scroll by, because the chances are you're writing a book that five other people at least have written the same thing about, right? So you're not trying to approach something with any really original idea. So you want to make sure that at least the cover grabs their attention initially and then they click through and obviously your content's going to be great.
Let me ask you this. So for the books that you've written that you've self-published, are most of the sales from your audience, or are there people searching to solve problems?
They're searching to solve. So initially, most of the sales came from my audience. And I did ask other people to help me promote. And I did all the typical launch strategies that you can read in any like launch book or post or anything like that. But I think after that initial phase, like I don't ever promote it anymore. I never promote it and it still gets sales. So those sales are just coming from people on Amazon who find it because it either has high reviews or has appears in the search. You know, I don't do a lot of, I should do more like digging into the analytics of that, but I don't. And because it's become just such a passive thing, I forget about it. But I would say, you know, initially the sales can come from your own audience, but over time they don't. It comes from people outside of your audience.
So that implies then that your books solve a specific problem that people are searching for.
Yes.
Okay. What if you're like a fictional novelist and like no one's going to be really searching for, I mean, you're not solving any problems, right?
Yeah.
Does that work well and does that generate passive income?
So my daughter's actually working on a fiction book right now.
Okay.
So I'll probably end up helping her get that on Amazon at some point. I think you can have success with fiction as well. I think you have to be a good writer though. I really do. Like I don't know because I'm not that kind of a writer, but I feel like you have to go through all of those, like the arc and the character development, and you have to bring people back around. And because I read a lot of fiction books on Amazon because they're cheap. So I'll like read them if I'm on a trip or, you know, at the beach, I want something really easy to read. I'll just get something free on. And they're, for the most part, they're decent. I mean, they're cheesy, but they're not terribly written, and they're like $2 and $3 books. So I think that you can absolutely do this as a fiction publisher, but the strategy is probably very different.
Yeah. So Tony reads a lot of $2 and $3 romance novels.
I do. All trashy novels. I actually read like a lot of murder. She killed her whole family.
This is what I've heard. And again, I don't have any experience with this, but with fiction, you have to write a series of books. And once people like your stories, then they'll just buy your entire collection. So it's more of a long-term play, I think.
That's absolutely accurate. And that's exactly what I do. Once I find a fiction writer on Amazon that I like, I'll buy all their books.
Yeah.
So because then you're not disappointed. You know, like even if it's cheesy, you know what to expect.
Right. Yeah. Do you have anything more to say about self-publishing?
I think so. My thought on this is that it is a great passive income stream once you get it launched. And I think a lot of people have. So most of my self-published books that I've put out there have been content from my website that I have just turned into a book. Now, it's not verbatim word for word, but I looked at core content on my site that was doing well and thought, okay, this, and just like what you said, it's a problem that people want a solution for. So if people are looking, then what if I just put this into a place on like Amazon where people don't look for me, right? People are finding me on the web, but they're not finding me on Amazon. So like, why don't I put this on Amazon where billions of people search every day for things? So I think if you're thinking about doing this, if you have a ton of content on your website, this is a great way to just kind of like test the waters. I wouldn't go write a brand new thing. I'd take your old content and massage it. Now, there were, so I don't know anymore if this is the case, but there were some rules back in the day where like you couldn't verbatim copy word for word from a blog, from blog posts and put it on Kindle.
These are all the questions I was about to ask you.
Yes.
So you know how I have like 800 blog posts.
Yes.
What if I just took each blog post, because there's no limit on the number of words, and just publish those as separate books for free?
You can do it for free. Yes, you can do it for free. You can't charge, I believe, is the distinction. So,
I'm saying like just allowing Amazon to distribute my content, but each blog post is a book.
No, I take that back. I've just reversed it. I think if you put something free on Amazon, it can't be free anywhere else. I think that's the rule. You don't need to do, I mean, I know you have some writers. Your writers could probably tweak it to the point where it's not considered duplication anymore. It's not like it has to be something totally new. It just can't be verbatim word for word.
I'm just wondering if Amazon would like that. Because then you're just like, you're like poo-pooing the whole platform by putting like blog posts on there and using Amazon as a distribution platform, right?
I mean, I think they're happy anytime anyone comes to their site, aren't they? so they can serve you
up. Would that make you look bad, though? Like, if you were just publishing these, like, 5,000 word books, let's say.
I don't know. I mean, I don't spend a lot of time in the very short content on Amazon. I'd have to look. I know back in the day when I did my first one, I wanted it to hit 100 pages. And I don't remember why, but I think 100 pages to me was like a sweet spot of like the amount of length a book needed to be. Now, my book was a book of crafts, right? So it wasn't about the words.
Right.
Because it was like crafts and tutorials. But I think we had a student put a book up, I want to say that was pretty short, like 70 some pages.
Well, okay, so 70 some pages is still whatever, 35,000, no, is it 35,000 words? I don't know. I can't remember what the conversion is, but I'm just curious if this is like a good way to just distribute your content. There must be some word limits or something. Like Amazon doesn't want their entire platform to be polluted by these like 2,000 word crappy books, right?
Probably not. Yeah, I would say that. But
I'm just curious. Yeah.
I'm trying to look at my bookshelf right now. I will say I'm disappointed when I buy a book and it comes and it's like 100 pages.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking 100, you're talking like hundreds of pages. I'm talking about like 10 pages.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, if it was free, I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. It's worth, I don't know, it might be worth trying.
Because then like it'd be like a blog on steroids.
So this is something I'm in the process of doing. I just started this because, as you know, I haven't made my giant announcement yet to the world because everyone, of course, needs to know everything about me. I'm in the middle of another content on it, right? Went to FinCon, got jazzed up. I know he's laughing at me. Y'all can't see him.
It's been like 5 years.
So no, when I started, I had like 13,000 posts. I got it down to 4,000 posts. But I realized after we talked and I talked to some other people that like I really needed to get strict with like cutting the content. So my site's divided up into six sections. One section's already been culled. It only has four posts left out of, I think it started with like 900. So there's four posts left on one section of the site. So I have five more sections to go. I'm in the next section, which I realized I never actually did a content audit on because it's mostly stuff about my kids. And I was just like at an absolute loss. I'm totally going off to, it needs to be another podcast. Anyway, I have a lot of content on there that like absolutely does not fit with my site, needs to be gone, but I also don't want it to go away. So I'm actually right now having my assistant go through and pull, it's 100 posts of a specific topic, and she's pulling all of that and putting it in a Google Doc. And then, so if I want to put it on Kindle, I might. So it'll be 100 posts, and what I'll do is I'll keep the one page on the site where it's like currently linking to all the other posts, and I might just link people out to Amazon.
So does that mean that that's like a 150-page book, maybe more right there?
Yeah, probably.
Interesting. Okay, so what is your minimum threshold for putting out a book lengthwise?
So I've put out ebooks on my website that are like under 30 pages.
Oh, okay.
On Amazon? On Kindle? No, just on like download PDF. Because I think that's true. You don't even need to do this on Amazon. You can just write a book and put it on your site as a PDF and use like, I use WP eStore. I don't know, is eJunkie still around? I think it probably is.
It is actually.
You can do this on Shopify. You can deliver it via Shopify if you want. They have a digital platform to, so you don't need to go on Amazon if you don't want to do this. You can just sell it on your own site. So on my own site without Amazon, I have about a 30 page threshold.
30-page threshold. Okay. I'm going to have to ask my buddies who do a lot of self-publishing whether this blog, like I could just take 800 posts that are like 5,000 words or longer and turn it into 800 ebooks. I don't think it'd be that hard.
You could.
I'm just wondering what the ramifications are. I can't afford to get my Amazon account suspended, right?
Yes.
For something like this.
Yes, that's true. Well, so my publisher account is not the same as my store account.
It's all tied. So this is what happened to my buddy. He did something wrong with AWS. Mm-hmm. His AWS account got suspended, and then all of his purchasing accounts and everything got suspended too.
Ooh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, he couldn't buy anything, and he just realized how dependent he is on just Amazon services.
If I couldn't buy anything on Amazon, I would be like a bazillionaire by the end of the year. Like that would probably be the best thing that ever happened to me if I got suspended from purchasing on Amazon. I'd be rich. Like I'd have a brand new car and a vacation every weekend.
So our mutual friend Jim has this friend who's in the personal finance space. All he does is put out books on Kindle. Mm-hmm. short ones. I mean, yes. By short, I mean like 100 pages or less.
Yeah.
That cover a very specific focus topic. But he does a really good job on it. He has an editor cover and everything.
Yeah.
And that generates, I want to say, 5 figures of passive income every single month.
Yeah.
For him.
And that's another thing I would say, if you're thinking about doing this, because I think this is a very nice side hustle. I mean, I think it could be your full-time job too, for sure. But yeah. If you are still working a traditional 9-to-5, you're looking for some extra income to sort of start building out something else, this could be your side hustle to help you make, you know, a couple thousand dollars a month. It's kind of like back when Amazon first started letting people do t-shirts on the platform.
Yeah.
It wasn't hard to make a couple thousand dollars. It's still not hard to do that in the publishing side of Amazon. You can, I mean, it's going to take work. You obviously have to put the effort into it. You just can't put out garbage. But it's definitely one way where if you're like, I don't know if I want to start a blog or a podcast or YouTube channel. If you have stuff to say, put it in an ebook, put it out there, start generating that revenue, and then gives yourself a little cushion to then go, okay, you know what? I love doing this. I think I'm going to turn my books into podcasts, right? Or whatever it is. Turn them into YouTube videos, make TikToks, who knows? But I think it's definitely something not to sleep on. I don't think it's past its prime. I think there's still a lot of opportunity for people there.
So in the hierarchy of content writing, what would you do first? Would you start with an ebook or would you start with a blog?
I think if you don't know, I would start with an ebook.
Okay.
Just put it out there. What's the worst? I mean, promote it on Facebook to your friends.
Well, it's easy to say that, but putting out an ebook in my mind is a lot more work than putting out a blog.
But if you're not, I'm saying if you want to start creating content, but you don't know where to begin as far as like, maybe I just want to be a YouTuber and my website's going to be my home base, right? You don't really want to put out a lot of like content like that, or maybe you want to start a podcast. I think it's just something you can start doing without, like, you don't have to freak out about WordPress. You don't have to do anything like as far as technical, because you can find someone on Fiverr to format your book too, if you don't want to mess with
right.
that.
Yeah.
So. But let's talk about when you hit the big... See, and here's the thing. I think traditional publishing is like, well, now I'm big time. You can be big time self-publishing. You can make just as much money or more.
We can talk about Brandon Turner. His book was like the best-selling real estate book in all of Amazon self-published.
Yeah.
And it makes a lot of money. Actually, I had a conversation with Brandon about this recently. It makes a lot of money every month. He makes these royalty checks that are pretty large. He somewhat regrets not traditionally publishing at least one of those books. He's put out several at this point.
Yeah.
Again, for ego. I think that's the only. Yeah.
But, I think there's a lot of pros to self-publishing. And if you want to try writing a book, it's a great way to do it. I think there are some big time pros to publishing traditionally. I think the number one is legitimacy.
Right.
So, because even though I have read some, like Brandon's books are incredible. I've read a couple of them. Even though the content might be exactly the same in a traditional versus self-published book, if you can say that you've got, you know, I can't think of any publishers off the top of my head. Penguin.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. Yep.
I can think of all curriculum publishers. That's who's coming to my head.
McGraw-Hill.
McGraw-Hill. But if you can say, you know, I have this book, it opens the door for media, speaking. I think once you have a traditionally published book, you can start charging for some of those things, whereas before it's a little bit harder to sort of break into the paid side of things. But I think having that book just is an immediate legitimacy, even if I don't think it's that hard to be traditionally published these days, because there's all these tiny publishers out there that are looking for people. Like, I get pitched to write a book probably – I used to get pitched like once a month. Now I get pitched probably a couple times a year to write a book.
That's still pretty good. I can't remember the last time I got pitched to do it.
And yeah, so I mean, I think there's still a lot of opportunity out there. You don't have to go with like one of the massive publishers. So you can still get that legitimacy with a smaller publisher. But you wanted to go with a big one.
Well – that was my goal.
Yeah.
But well, you never know. You never know, right? Because, I mean, we can talk about the steps right now, but it was a pain. It took a year to put together a proposal. So in order to get the attention of one of these publishers, you have to shop around your book.
Yes.
And this proposal, I want to say, was like 80 pages long.
Yeah.
You have to have in that proposal a sales plan. Like how many books you think you could sell like in a year, 2 years, or what's the marketing plan? There's a whole section on like what your audience is. Mm-hmm. And then there's like what the book's about, right? And so again, I'm sure there's a lot of variety in the way you put together these book proposals, because there's no like set format they have to go in. But we submitted like almost a full outline of the book. And then we even submitted two sample chapters of the book. And then we shopped them around. And so, you also have to get you don't have to get an agent, but an agent actually has contacts within all these big publishers and can get you the meetings. And if you were to try to do that by yourself, I don't even know where I would have started, actually.
Well, I think that's actually a really big deal, is that if you do want to traditionally publish, there's a gateway to the big publishers. And so an agent does have the Rolodex. I mean, who knows probably anyone under 25 doesn't even know what that word means, but they have all the contacts in the industry, so they can get you the meetings, which is really the most important thing. Now, I will say, if you're a content creator, you have a huge advantage in publishing a traditional book, because they're looking for people who can sell their own books. They don't want to do the work.
Well, I don't think they do any work.
Right. They want you to do all the work.
Yeah. I mean, they'll provide resources, like an editor, for example. Like, you don't need to go and hire an editor. And they have a team of people who will help you design your book cover.
Yes.
And
top notch.
And they do provide like introductions to other authors, and they have access to other, you know, like they can get you quotes, you know, those little quotes that go on the covers, like, this is the best book ever. Turns out like a lot of authors don't actually write those.
Barbara Corcoran has given that for like 1,000 different books. I think she has just someone who sits in an office and writes her little two sentence endorsement.
Yeah, exactly. And and some people charge for those, right?
Yes.
So,
but I think it's kind of like, why do you join a country club? You don't join a country club because you like the pool or you golf. You join the country club because of the other people in the country club. It's going to give you the connections to meet other people that can, you can benefit them, they can benefit you. Same with a traditional publisher. You can put a book out no matter what, but if you want to make the connections, if you want to get, you know, someone to endorse the book, right, that you would never be able to have access to regularly, you know, probably giving you some insider tips. I mean, I think there's a lot. I mean, this is what they do all the time. So they have a lot to offer you as far as getting the book out there and being successful, even though at the end of the day, you're the person who's got to promote your own book no matter what.
So here's the other reason to go with the traditional publisher. It's easier to get international distribution.
Yeah.
So I remember going into this, I was thinking only the US, right? Or my audience, but they have contacts that will allow you to easily get your book translated and then distributed in other countries as well, which, you know, will extend the life and the reach of your book.
And I mean, it also, like you said in the very beginning, your book's gonna, I mean, I remember when our friend Jen Garza, her book got into Costco, which is really hard to get your book into Costco. And she went with a traditional publisher. Like, that was a really big deal to get into Costco. Just like you said, I want my book to be on a bookshelf. If you're self-publishing, that's really hard. In fact, my client, who's a curriculum publisher, is trying to get her curriculum into some of the big curriculum stores. And it's tough, even though she probably outsells most of the curriculum in those stores. It's just really hard to get your foot in the door. And if you don't know the right people, they won't even talk to you.
Yeah, it's a legitimacy thing. I think the closest analogy I can come up with is college, right? I don't think necessarily that the education of a Harvard, Yale, Stanford, whatever, is necessarily better than other schools. It's just the people that you meet and the contacts that you make.
Yeah,
that's what you're paying for, really.
It's all the parents of the kids going to that school.
It's the professors, and it's like the kids and
all the donors.
Like, I didn't even realize this, but like, I was good friends with the person who's like the president of Nintendo. I was just inadvertently, and these are all low key people. I was friends with someone who's like the top toothpaste maker in Taiwan. It's these random things, right?
Could you get a more weird conlink?
Random, right?
Yeah. I met the guy who's in charge of all the thimbles in Iceland. So,
well, I also have a friend who's like is the head of like the zipper company, like YKK, right? Okay. These are random things. Anyway, so that's probably the benefit.
Yeah. So there's definitely a benefit, and even though they, you're the one who's still doing the promotion, it just, there's a lot behind it. And they have a lot riding on you succeeding too, right? Because they've given you money up front. Now, it also is met with, you've just, I don't know how much you want to share about this, but it's also met with some challenges in that you don't have total control over what you write. So when you self-publish a book, you can write whatever you want and no one's going to tell you not to. And, you know, obviously your editor will probably make some corrections to grammar or spelling, whatever. But at the end of the day, you can say whatever you want to say. When you traditionally publish, you can't say everything you want to say.
I haven't tested the limits of that yet.
Yes.
But in the first pass of editing, the editor, like sometimes I make Asian jokes, Chinese jokes, and then she corrected all those. I'm like, that's the way I talk.
Yeah.
Right?
That's who I am.
So we'll see how it goes. But I mean, this is what I've been told by other authors. Like ultimately the publisher and the editor will defer to you in the long run if you mm-hmm. put up a fight, because they want you to be proud of the book and they want you to promote it since you're the primary sales vehicle.
Right.
Like as a publisher, you don't want to piss off the author to the point where they're not even going to push the book anymore.
Right.
Right. And again, I can understand, like I had this one joke about China in there. I'm probably going to remove it because I want to be able to go to China. Right. Can you imagine, like, because, you know, the government's very specific about that. Can you imagine, like, I'm going to China for, like, the Canton Fair and they just pull me off the plane because something I wrote in
my
book.
I won't go with you anymore.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
I'm out. Yeah, so I totally agree with you on that. But I think you have to be prepared that you will probably have to fight a little bit for some of the things that you want to keep in the book and what some of the things that might not be in there in the end.
The other disadvantage, I would say, and this could be an advantage for some people, but they put you on these deadlines.
I was just going to say that. It's the deadlines.
Right? I just had a recent deadline.
Yeah. You were freaking out.
I was freaking out. So I ended up working on the plane for 6 hours. And then I came home and I worked 12 straight hours on it to meet this deadline because I wasn't entirely happy with the second draft. And it wouldn't have happened, obviously, if I was self-publishing. But on the flip side, things tend to drag, right?
Yeah.
If you're all on your own. And having these deadlines actually makes you finish something.
So, yeah, you want to talk about deadlines dragging? I have almost a full book in Google Drafts that is, I'm waiting on. Like, I have two more things that need to be done. It's been in there for like a year and a half.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, like, deadlines, I like deadlines because it forces you to.
Yeah. I have mixed feelings about them because I'm pretty good about hitting my self-imposed deadlines.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so I don't like to be rushed.
Yeah.
It's part of my personality. But, you know, in this case, it helped with you know, getting stuff done. Because I do want this book to be released in time for Seller Summit, mm-hmm. which is a kind of an aggressive schedule, so I can do a book signing. So the deadlines help for me.
No, you haven't run that through the chief.
To the chief? To the committee?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that
the committee
that was,
of me? You want me to get an extra table? That's going to cost you.
I'll sign your book. Fine. Good Lord.
So I think the only hard part that I have with deadlines, obviously I need them because I'm dragging my feet on stuff. But if there's any creativity or creative component to the book, I think deadlines are hard when it comes to creative stuff. I do my best. Like literally this morning I got up and I had an idea about something and I opened my computer at like 6:30 and I implemented it, right? But I didn't have that idea yesterday or 5 days ago or on Sunday. I didn't have a deadline for it. But so I think sometimes deadlines can be tough if you're writing a little bit of a how-to book with stories, right? It's like a
It's actually not as how-to, you know, because there's only so specific you can get in a book.
Yeah.
But mostly stories and
But there's a lot of people whose books are very much stories and that trajectory. And sometimes that's hard to do, like, okay, by 6 o'clock today, you need to have all this. And you're like, well, I'm not feeling it, right? I'm not feeling that way to convey. Because I think when you write a book, and you and I have talked about that, there's people that are just really great writers. And you read what they write, and you're just immediately, like, captured by the words and how they put them together. And there's other people that are, like, good at writing if they're explaining something to you or telling you how to do something. But I probably wouldn't want to read their story because it would be too, you know.
Hey, that's what you said about me.
I did. You know that, though. You're not surprised. So I think that's the only
part. Hey, that last video that you poo-pooed a little bit is actually doing really well. Anyway.
Because you had zero emotion. Zero. I watched that and I was like, can I get a tear? Can I get a sniffle?
Definitely not going to do that on video. It's just not my personality. Yeah.
And I was so sad when my daughter grew up. I was like, how about a twinkle in your eye? And the best part is like when I, so Steve did this video, go watch it on YouTube. What's the title of the video? I don't remember what we titled it. I don't know what
it's called. The single most, the mindset shift that changed my life forever.
Yes. Mindset shift that changed Steve's life forever. And the funny thing is it's a really good, powerful video. And there's a lot of, I think, very good lessons in it. Here's the other thing. I know you and I know how much you care about your family and your kids. Like, that is like your number one without a doubt. But watching you talk about it, you're just like no emotion.
Do you expect me to start crying or something?
Well, no, because like when we're together and like, you know, when we're together, usually we're traveling. So you're not with your family and like you'll get a text or something will happen and you're like, oh, and you get like this like goofy grin on your face because you like find out your kids did something cool or like, and you get all like sappy, right? Which is not your personality. But then I'm watching this video and you're like completely straight face. I was like, I've seen you get sappy about your kids and your wife.
No, but, like, I don't think so. I've never been sappy in front of you ever.
Not I'm sappy cry, sure. Not sappy cry, sappy like, oh, I just love that kid.
And you I see that stuff all the time. Yeah.
He gets this grin on his face and he gets all like, he looks like a kid, right? When you talk about this. But then the video, you're like, I just love that kid. You're like, that's all. I wanted a little bit of the sappy.
You wanted some sappy. Okay. No.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I can't
That's why
pretend.
Steve's writing a book. It's he can the massage the words until he sounds sappy.
Yeah.
Okay, let's wrap it up. Yeah. My thinking is this. If you think you have a book and you write it, you can always write it and pitch it and see what happens. I do think, and this happens not as much today, but it happened more back in the day. If you do get pitched by somebody, and I hear about people getting emails all the time, it doesn't necessarily mean you need to go with them, but it means that you're on the radar. So if you have someone reach out to you about writing a book, that might be the time to get an agent and pitch a book to several other publishers. I had several friends who did that several years ago where they got an email like, hey, are you interested in writing a book for us? And they ended up not going with that company just because they weren't the best deal for them. They didn't offer them, you know, the most incentive or bonuses or whatever. But I think if you have something in you that you want to put out there, just do it and see what happens. I don't think it matters which way you go as long as you get it out there.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.